The following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9.
Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you.
Listeners to this radio show should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the mutual fund, variable annuity, and variable annuity subaccounts. To obtain a prospectus, you may contact Friedman Financial or your financial advisor. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making a potential investment.
And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and just above Alto Forno Restaurant on 41 Cross Street. We have been there for approaching our second year there now at that location, but we have always been on the elbow of the North Shore Mall for 40 plus years and been in business for 53. You know, it's really remarkable when you think about the number of years Friedman Financial has been doing this. Not me, I was two when my father started the firm, but the whole idea of planning your financial future, and what we've learned, I think, over the past two decades, is that we're focusing more on advice than we are on just, what should I buy? I remember when I started with my dad, people would come in, hey, do you have this fund? Or, can you offer me this fund? Or I've been looking at that fund, or I would never sell that fund. Or do you have no load funds? Or do you have load funds? Or do you have, everyone had a product or some kind of a idea in mind. Today, it's far different, at least if you're in the advice world. Now it's about, how do I take all this stuff that I have, this collection of accounts, retirement accounts, investment portfolios, money in the bank, my expenses, all that stuff. How do I look at the big picture? And how do I create a strategy so that I can live the lifestyle that I want, yet be able to still feel confident that I'm putting money aside, that I'm doing the right thing, so that when that time comes in my life, whenever that might be, where the paycheck stops, that you'll have enough resources to support yourself. Now, when I say the paycheck stops, generally when I say that, I'm thinking about retirement. I'm thinking about you've worked a great number of years, and maybe you've had several jobs. Maybe you've had one, whatever it is. But you've accumulated all this stuff, and you realize, oh my goodness, I need to decide whether to take Social Security now or later. When should I roll over my money? Should I take a pension? How much money do I need to spend every month? Yeah, that's generally what I'm talking about. But there comes a point in your life where you could find yourself without a paycheck too, and that's because you just got laid off. You were unemployed. Company went out of business. Oftentimes, it's not even your fault, but it's just the cost of doing business, right? It's what happens. It's business, as they say. And in order to prepare yourself properly for that, the first thing you need to do is have an emergency fund. What is an emergency fund? An emergency fund isn't mom or dad. An emergency fund isn't some extra cash that you stash under your mattress or put in a safe deposit box. But an emergency fund is a thoughtful approach to making sure that you have money aside that would provide for the expenses for you and your family for 3 to 6 months. But Mark, I don't know what I spend every month. How would I know how much money I need to have in my emergency fund? Good point. So we need to figure out how much you spend every month. But I don't want to do that. Well, how serious do you really want to be about planning for your financial future? If you say you want to get your financial house in order, it starts with understanding money that comes in and money that goes out, how much you have, how much you own, and how much you owe. So let's take a couple baby steps back. Let's do what I call financial advice in a language you can understand. Let's talk about how to figure out how much you spend every month, or perhaps over the course of a year. It's really not that hard. You can do this. But what you need to do is to start by pulling out your bank statement. Now, chances are that you run all of your expenses through one, perhaps two, bank accounts. Yeah, maybe you put money in your Visa card and on your Macy's card, and you also write checks to all these different places, and you take money out of the bank. But generally, when you're paying those bills, you're generally paying them through one bank account. So all that your deposits are coming into that same bank account, your checks, your automatic withdrawals, your money that comes out of the ATMs, the checks you write to the credit card companies, it's all coming out of that same bank account. So one of the things that a bank account provides to you, or the bank statement provides to you, is a number usually at the very top of that statement or at the bottom of the statement, and it says total deposits and total withdrawals. Now, we oftentimes don't look at that number because we look at the itemization. We say, oh, what's that charge for? What's that charge for? Oh, yeah, I remember that charge. Who spent the money on this? That's where I'm looking, is the itemization. I don't care about the itemization at this point. My job as a financial planner is not to tell you how to spend your money. If you want to go golfing every day, that's fine. You want to get your nails done six times a week? Totally up to you. I don't care whether you shop at Whole Foods or Shaw's or wherever. It doesn't really matter. What I want to try to understand is how much do you spend in aggregate over the course of a month? And that total withdrawal number on the top or bottom of your bank statement will tell you that. So what I want you to do is, I don't want you to just pull out that statement. I want you to grab the past 6 months' statements. Maybe even grab 12 months' statements if you really, really want to know. And you'll start to look at those numbers and you'll go, oh my God, I'm going to look at this number for the month. And it says, I spent $7,000 for the month. How is that possible? I don't spend that much money every month. Well, oh, I know why. This was the year, this was the month we had to redo the driveway, or we bought a brand new lawnmower, or it was the vacation month. That's why it was so expensive. So that's why I want you to grab more than 1 month. Grab a whole bunch of those months. Add them all up, divide by the number of months. Let's say if you get six, divide by the number of months, six, divide those statements by six, and you'll come up with an average. That's going to be your average monthly expense. And you might say to yourself, no, that's not right. Well, you can argue with yourself as much as you want, but the bank is actually accounting for how you spend your money. Now, a few things to think about. Maybe, just maybe, when money comes into your account, some of that money goes out to savings. Maybe it goes that you're funding a 529 plan for your child. Maybe you're saving $100 a month or whatever it is. So yeah, you got to subtract those few pieces out because those are savings. That's long-term savings. But this is money that's coming in and money that's going out. So how much is going out of your house every month to cover your expenses? And you're going to see that number and you're going to be surprised. But that's the number that you need to work with. You need to take that number and then multiply it times three and then multiply it times six. Because the number times three says this is the least amount of money that I want you to have in the bank for an emergency fund. Multiply that number times six, and that's probably the most amount that you need in the bank as an emergency fund. So you want to be within that range. Ask yourself, are you? If you lost your job right now and you needed to rely on maintaining your lifestyle as it is today for the next 3 months, 6 months until you found a job, and you had to deplete the money in the bank, would you have the resources to do that? That's a real important question. If you don't know the answer to that, you need to figure that out, because before we start deciding how should I invest my money, should I buy life insurance, should I get this, none of that stuff matters. None of that stuff matters until you've built a base. Now, where should that emergency fund money go? Not into an investment account. I don't care if it's in a 0% producing bank account. And these days, with interest rates starting to come back down again, you may be getting to that level again. But I don't care. This is money. You need it. You need it now. You need it immediately. I find many people choose their investment account to be their emergency fund. That, my friends, is very, very dangerous. Because look what's happened this past week. Markets were just going swimmingly. Since January, everything's just been going up. And then over the past few days, during this week, we're in the week, middle of August right now, the markets have dropped, the Dow Jones Industrial has lost almost 2,000 points. Now, 2,000 points sounds like a lot. It is a lot. In the whole scheme of things, it's not a big deal. But what if you needed to draw your money right now? And all of a sudden, your account value is less than what the account value was at the beginning of the month. You might not be too happy. Not only do you have to spend money that you didn't want to spend because you lost a job and you needed to come up with cash, but you're now having to spend money and take it out of an account where you just lost money. That's like a double whammy or whatever. You don't want to do that. You don't want to be in that position. So I'd encourage you to work hard to build that emergency fund. 3 to 6 months of your living expenses. And by the way, I once said this to somebody, what's your living expenses? He says, oh, my living expenses around $5,000 or $6,000 a month. I said, geez, the way I look at it, you're spending more like $8,500 a month. No way. And I show him what it is. He says, oh, you're including my mortgage in there? Yeah. Your mortgage is part of your living expenses, not just eating out and cable and electric. Everything you spend for the month. That's how it works. Maintain that emergency fund. We got to take a quick break. When we get back, I got all sorts of things to talk about as it relates to this volatility we're seeing in the market. And how do we wrap our arms around stuff so we don't feel so nervous about what's going on that we can look towards the future, we can build that retirement that we want. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
I need dollar.
You could blend the classic strategies of investing with a contemporary approach to financial planning. That's what Friedman Financial can do for you. Wherever you are along your financial journey, Friedman Financial has the skills, technology, and experience to help you make smart financial decisions. Their team of certified financial planners will deliver an independent, objective, personalized plan for you. Let's make 2019 the year you get serious about your financial plan. Friedman Financial, financial advice in a language you can understand.
Planning for retirement and managing your investments has never been more difficult. Chances are you're trying, but worried you may make a misstep. Friedman Financial is all about getting your financial house in order and providing financial advice in a language you can understand. Their interactive software and in-person conversations will help you determine if you're on track. For more than 50 years, Friedman Financial has delivered independent advice. If now's the time to get serious about life and retirement, visit Friedman, 2 E's and a D, financial.com.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
If I had $1 million.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and just above Alto Forno Restaurant on 41 Cross Street. We've been in that area for a long time, in the Peabody area. I mean, that's where I grew up. I went to high school here. I was president of the Chamber of Commerce. My folks grew up here as well. We finally moved out about 20 years ago, moved to North Andover when it was time for us to have our own family, and that's where I live today. So lots of connections to the North Shore, to the Merrimack Valley area, where we provide and we continue to provide financial planning and investment management advice to individuals and families who live in that surrounding community, and we've been doing it since 1968. If now's the time for you to get serious about your financial planning, I'd really encourage you to give us a call. 978-531-8108. 978-531-8108. 8108. When I last left you, we were talking about emergency funds. If you missed our last episode, that's what we were focusing on, and how to calculate what you need to have the right amount of money in an emergency fund. But today I thought we'd mix things up a little bit. It is August, and the market has not been very smooth this month. In fact, I got a report that came out from LPL Financial. It was their weekly market commentary this week, and I thought it was very interesting. It said that, did you know that for the past 10 years, historically, August is the worst months in the market. So you can go back, look historically over the past 10 years. It's been August, by the way. In it's really remarkable what it's done. For the past 20 years, it's been a little bit of a mix. But the past 10 years, August, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because people are on vacation. Not everybody's head's in the game. I don't know what it is, but it makes the market volatile. And what we've seen this past week has been the markets fall off a bit. However, I happened to be traveling earlier in the week, and I called Marion, my business partner. I said, you know, when I saw the market going down 500, 600, 700, I said, I'm rooting for 1,000. I said, I want this market to close down 1,000 points for the day. I think it'll be great. And you know why I think it would be great? First of all, we need it. The markets just can't go in one direction forever. But secondarily, the markets have dropped over the past couple days on stuff that has nothing to do with the United States. The thing about all this news is really China-related. And I don't mind that, because when we have instances like that, whether it's China, whether it was Venezuela, whether it was Greece, whether it was India, whether it's Russia, those are all very, very short-term lived events. These become buying opportunities for those that have cash in their portfolios, in their bank accounts, that they want to put money into long-term investments. This is not for speculation. I'm not encouraging that. I never have encouraged speculation. But these little blips, and that's really all these are going to be, are blips in the market. These are opportunities for you, and they should not scare you at all. In fact, like I said, I was away this past week. I was in Charlotte, and I called at the end of the day. I called the office, and I said, so did we get any phone calls from people who were nervous? Because the market did drop. It came close to hitting 1,000, then it ended up down only 700 for the day. But we had a couple other days before that where it was down 200. A couple days after that was down 200. So the market's off a bit. And my staff said, it has been just as quiet here today as it has been all summer, which says something about our clients. It says something, I think, about our clients understanding that they're in this for the long haul, that markets do go up and down. It tells us, for our listeners here, it lets you know that at Friedman Financial, we are not speculative investors. We're not getting in and getting out, though there will be buying opportunities. Sure, we are doing what's called dollar cost averaging for many of our clients. Many people who maybe have a rollover from a company and they go, oh my God, I got this big amount of money. Now what should I do with it? The market's so high. How should I handle this money? Should I put it in right now? No, we have a strategy that we put in place where we will re-enter your dollars into the market over 5 months, over 8 months, over 12 months, whatever is appropriate for you. Now, in reality, if we're long-term investors, should it matter when I put the money in the market? No, it really shouldn't. But there is that emotional component of you saying, you know, I want to feel like I'm doing this prudently, that there is a thoughtful approach to this. And so when you're dollar cost averaging through a firm like Friedman Financial, we're not saying, okay, on the first of the month, we're going to buy. No, what we're going to do is we're going to set it up to say, okay, during the first week of every month, we're going to make a buy. However, if the market has just gone up again consistently for 3 or 4 months, we might say, you know what? Maybe we'll hold off for making a buy this month. Maybe we'll wait because we know there's going to be some dips along the way. We'll be thoughtful in our approach. We're not going to be mechanical in our approach. And I think that's one of the things that distinguishes an individual financial planner, a certified financial planner who works with you, not through some corporate program that they don't have to follow certain templates or guides or anything like that. They do what's best for you. And that's what we have done for all of our clients. We focus on building a strategy that's right, not only for your investments, but for everything in your financial life. And we find it to be extraordinarily helpful. Look, we had a client that came in for a review this past week, and they looked at their portfolio, and they know the market's been up for the year, up over the past 12 months, but their account was flat. And you might think to yourself, wow, Mark, you must have really heard it from the clients. I said, no, because when we met with them, we talked about the fact that we could have invested the money right now, all of it right now, or we could have taken a dollar cost averaging approach, buying a little bit every month, knowing that if the market continues to go up like it had been, you were not going to be the beneficiary of great returns for the first year. However, if the market went down and you had bought all at once, you would really have been hurt. So they said, you know what? I don't want to do that. We both agreed we would take the risk. And when we were reminded of the conversations that we have, and we're reminded because at Friedman Financial, we put everything in writing. We want to give you our advice in writing. So there's no, oh, what did he say? Let me be sure I misinterpreted what he said that way. No, 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 no. We're not going to do any of that. You're going to make sure that you know what you're doing. So one of the things that I want to make sure you know what you're doing is when you're buying an investment, that you know that when the investment professional, or even when you try to build your portfolio, you know that it's important to diversify, to put money in a variety of different types of what are called asset classes. Those asset classes can oftentimes be referred to as stocks, bonds, and cash. And then you can take each of those stocks, bonds, and cash and break them down to further subcategories. Now, many people say they've heard of large cap, small cap, mid cap, large value, growth funds, value funds, all of that. Well, what's kind of interesting is a report came out recently from, I'm trying to find it here. The Wall Street Journal put out this story about the fact that the market is up so much for the year, despite what's happened over the past week or two. Who cares about what happened there? The market's up pretty significantly, double-digit returns so far for the year. But it's been led primarily by three companies. When you hear about the market being up, they talk about the S&P 500, the 500 largest companies that trade on the market. But the market run-up has primarily been driven by three companies. And you may be surprised by one of them, because you've heard of this term, the FANG stocks. And if you owned the FANG stocks, Facebook, Apple, actually Apple and Alphabet, which is Google, so two A's there, F-A-A-N-G, Facebook, Apple and Alphabet, Netflix, and, well, Google is there, you've done extraordinarily well. You've done better than anybody could have possibly imagined if that's what you owned. They've been up and down, but the exponential growth of these stocks over the past 5 years has been tremendous. However, there's one stock that people seem to think isn't doing so well, but has actually done extraordinarily well this year, and that's Facebook. I talked about Facebook as being part of the FANGs. Facebook has done well, but the one that has really surprised people is Microsoft. Who talks about Microsoft these days? When's the last time you said, oh, I got to get that Microsoft this, or this Microsoft that? Yeah. But Microsoft, believe it or not, remains the largest company in America. Not Amazon, not Netflix, not Apple. And in fact, Apple is down for the year. So the four leading companies this year are Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, and Facebook. If you owned Netflix, if you owned Apple, if you own Netflix, you've really struggled. If you've owned other stocks, you've struggled. But what's really interesting is I'm not encouraging you to buy individual stocks. I want to leave that to the portfolio managers. The portfolio managers know when to get in and when to get out. You have no business buying individual stocks. I've been telling you that since I've been in the business, but certainly since I started being here on the radio. The average person should not be buying individual stocks unless, of course, you want to say, all right, I'll just risk it. We'll see what happens. But don't count that as your performance, because you're probably putting a small amount of money aside to buy a particular stock. You're taking a risk on it. Some people are talking about these crazy cannabis stocks or some other type of technology stock or whatever it is. I'm recommending nothing. I'm recommending that that when you're building an investment portfolio, you're buying mutual funds or exchange-traded funds. You're buying a well-diversified portfolio. I'm not recommending an individual stock. But here's something that's interesting. You know that you want to own large cap. You want to own mid cap. You want to own small cap. Yet when I look at the performance of what large, mid cap, and small cap has done, just on a year-to-date basis, on average, large cap has done extraordinarily well. Mid cap has done a little less than what large cap has done. But small cap value especially, they're really having a tough year. And so when you look at the portfolio that you have, even if it's just investments in large, medium, and small, and you say, why am I not up as much as the market? Well, that's because you were prudent. You tried to build a portfolio that had large, medium, and small, large, mid, and small cap funds. You wanted some value funds. You wanted some growth funds. You wanted a combination. And as a result, you offered yourself some protection. You just haven't felt that protection yet because the market hasn't dropped. But when the market drops, you'll find that you won't go down as much as the S&P 500 would either, perhaps. It's all part of the diversification strategy. And then you layer in the bond-based investments that you have and the international-based investments that you might have. That adds further and further diversification to your portfolio. It reduces the risk. It doesn't give you that stellar performance numbers when you hear the market's up X or the market's down poorly. You're not going to be on those extremes. You're going to be squeezed. You're going to be squeezed quite a bit. And that's important. What you want in retirement is to minimize the volatility in your portfolio. You don't want the big ups and downs. You want to hear when the market fell 10% for the month that maybe you're only down 5. I think that would feel a lot better. But when the market's up 10% for the month, you're going, why aren't I up 10% for the month? Well, you can't have it both ways. It doesn't work that way unless you're really lucky. And that's not something, and luck is not something we're trying to do on this radio show. Luck is speculative. You want luck? Go to the Encore. See how you do. I don't know. You still got to pay that $22 for parking, which I think is the biggest ripoff. You go to any other casino in Vegas, in Atlantic City, it's free valet, right? They're willing to eat that cost. They're willing to let you spend your money in the casino. Yeah, I was not too happy about that. I decided to swing by the Encore a couple weeks ago. I hadn't been to the place, and I had my two daughters, Mindy and Alana, who are 23 and 21, and I had my son, Noah, who's 17. We figured, oh, we'll go check it out. Well, that's fine. I know we weren't going into the casino. We weren't going to do that, but I wanted to check out all the other stuff. You know, you got to see that, whatever, $18 million Popeye statue that's there, which I still don't believe it's $18 million, but it's, come on, really? Someone's willing to pay for that. I don't know what it costs someone to build that. But there's the carousel. There's a few things to see. I wanted to see what it was all about. And I go to pull in, and it's $22 to park. I said, yeah, I'm just going to be here for like 30 minutes. Well, I don't care. $22 to park. There's no way around that one, I guess, unless I went into the casino and I played some hands of blackjack or whatever and maybe got a red card or whatever it's called. But I couldn't do that because I was with my 17-year-old kid. We were just going to check it out. Well, apparently they don't want it to be a tourist attraction. They want you to go in and spend money in the casino. Understood. But I thought that there was, I was really surprised that they were going to charge me $22 to park. Nevertheless, I paid it. There are some stupid things we do with our money, and that was one of them, paying for parking at Encore. But here on this show, we generally try to focus on financial advice in a language you can understand. I hope you understand paying $22 just to look around is not a good use of your money. And with that thought, I want to take a quick break because I want to share with you an interesting story that talks about the ranges of returns of investments and why when you hear that the market over the past umpteen years has averaged, say, 7 or 8 or 9%, here's why it's not likely that you're going to see those kinds of returns on an annual basis moving forward. We'll talk about that and more. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Hi, this is Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial in Peabody. For more than 50 years, Friedman Financial has provided financial advice in a language you can understand to individuals and families all throughout the North Shore. At Friedman Financial, we know that planning for your retirement is overwhelming. Don't leave this important decision to chance, or even worse, the algorithms of a faceless technology solution. Our certified financial planner professionals meet with you face-to-face to know you and your retirement goals. If now's the time to get serious about your retirement, meet with a certified financial planner at Friedman Financial in person. You deserve a strategy that incorporates every aspect of your retirement plan. To learn more, give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or visit us at FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Friedman Financial, financial advice in a language you can understand.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
You're a rich girl, and you're going too far, because you know it don't matter anyway.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, where we've been providing financial planning and investment management advice to individuals and families all throughout the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the Southern New Hampshire area since 1968. Who's our core client? Everybody wants to know, Mark, who do you deal with? Who do you work with? What's the best client? Well, I'll tell you that, but just so you know, the advice that we provide on this radio show is really designed to be broad-based. It's for everybody. But if you're saying to yourself, you know, I like what I hear Mark talking about here on the radio, maybe this makes sense for me. Well, let me try to define for you what our ideal client looks like. Perhaps I'll be describing you. And maybe it makes sense to set up a free initial consultation at our office, talk with us, learn a little bit more about how we can help you achieve your financial goals, live a successful life in retirement, and really do what you want. So our ideal client is generally age 50 plus. You're either approaching retirement or you're in retirement. Some people are 10 years away. Some people are 2 years away. Some people are right there at it. And then there's those that are actually in retirement. So if you're 50 plus, that's a good segment to start with. Then I want you to think about this. In retirement, what do you plan to spend every month? Now, in the first segment of our show today, we talked about understanding what it is that you need to cover your expenses. Our typical clients spend somewhere between $5,000 and $12,000 a month. I know that's a big range, $5,000 and $12,000. Yeah, there's some people that spend less than that. I got some clients that spend $30,000 a month. But the $8,000 to $12,000 is probably the ideal number. But there's a lot of folks in retirement, certainly, who are spending $5,000 or $6,000 a month and don't know what to do with all the money. But those that are, actually, if you're in your 50s, to 60s, you're probably spending in that 8 to 12 number if you have kids, all that kind of stuff. So that's that segment. You generally have a net worth, if you include everything, including your house, of somewhere between, I don't know, $1 million and $3 million, including your house. Now, if your house is worth $900,000, but you have an $800,000 mortgage, your house is only worth $100,000. So let's just put all that together. Not that everybody has a $900,000 house. Maybe you have a house that's worth $500,000, but you have a $400,000 mortgage. It's still worth $100,000. That group of people over the age of 50, net worth between $1 million and $3 million, want to spend between, say, $8,000 and $12,000. You generally find yourselves with a lot of stuff scattered everywhere. You got bank accounts, you got investment accounts. Maybe you have an annuity. You have old 401k plans. Maybe you've been with three or four different companies and you haven't done anything with the retirement accounts. You've got decisions to make. You got kids that are thinking about going off to college. You have parents that are aging. There's a lot of pressure on you. You're thinking to yourself, when I start taking retirement, when I want to start taking Social Security, when should I take it? At age 70, I need to start taking a minimum distribution. How does that all fit in? How do I minimize my taxes? Will I really have to pay 28% of my money in taxes when I retire? All of those are fair questions to ask. We're going to look at all that stuff. Part of that will include creating an investment portfolio, but not until we know where everything is and what everything is worth, how it all works, how it's all owned, who's the beneficiary on your accounts. Have you updated those beneficiaries? We find more and more people walking into our office that have been with three or four different employers over the period of their life. They left an old 401k plan that they had back in the 70s, or an old retirement plan with their company. And back then, they named mom as beneficiary. But now they're married, their kids are teenagers. But if they die, mommy's getting the money. That's how it works. So part of the financial planning discussion that we're having with you encompasses far more than, am I in the right investment strategy? This fund doesn't seem to be doing so well. Should I make a change? That's a slice in what I call the financial planning pie. All right. One of the things that a lot of people, though, ask us about is with this market being as volatile as it's been in August, they're saying, do I need to do different? Yeah, I can't even speak today. Do I need to do something different? Should I be nervous? I see this stuff on the news. I see reports. I see our president talking. I see shootings. I see all sorts of stuff that are going on. Should I be nervous? Well, you can be as nervous as you want to be. But I want you to ask yourself, when do you plan to touch your money? The money that you've put aside long term. If it's not now, if it's not a year from now, if it's not 10 years from now, you need not worry about the noise of today. Because you could go back, just rewind a couple of years and a couple of years and a couple more years. And every single period of time that you look at, you will have found significant challenges, tragedies, disasters, crises, where you thought, oh, this time it's different. This is going to be it. Remember all the shows that you used to see back in 2008 and 2009 with, who was the guy from Family Ties? Robin Thicke. Robin Thicke, and he was advertising gold. Everywhere you went, every kiosk you could find at the mall, Robin Thicke was selling gold. Put your IRA into gold. Everybody should get gold. Where have those guys gone? You don't see those kiosks around anymore, do you? Everybody had a strategy. There's all these different types of currency strategies that might be out there. There's all sorts of, you now hear about the CBD strategy, all these different things. They're all, I think they're not strategies that you want to look at long term. These are speculative ideas and not something that you should be worried about. Neither should you be worried about the news and the sound bites that come across from our talking heads. But here's what's happened in 2008 and 2009. We were in a financial crisis. Banks were ready to close. People were scared. People were calling it the next depression, not recession, but the next depression, where people were committing suicide. People were running to the banks and taking all their money out because they didn't trust it. People were, in food lines, bread lines. People were worried that that was going to happen in 2008 and 2009. Well, I use that example as a story that I share with many clients, and it's called Diversification and the Average Investor. It's a report that's put together by J.P. Morgan, and I have it on the screen in my office. I show it to clients all the time because what it asks is the question, if I had invested $100,000 in October 2007, the date in which the market was at its all-time high, which I believe was around 11,000 at the time. Think about that. In 2007, the all-time high back then, 11,000. Some would, I want to say it's 11,000. It might have been 14,000. Still doesn't matter whether it was 11 or 14. Doesn't even matter. But you invested $100,000 in October of 2007. And then all of a sudden, the market started to fall apart. And from October of 2007 to March of 2009, all you did was see the market go down, and go down dramatically, a lot. The low point was in March. I believe it was March 9th of 2009. If you had invested $100,000 in October of 2007, your account would be worth about $50,000. Now, if you had invested $100,000, I should say, in the S&P 500, not in the bank, not in a diversified portfolio, if you had said, oh my God, this market's been soaring up, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to buy, because everybody says, buy an index fund. I'm going to just buy the S&P 500, put all my money there. So you bought it October of 2007, $100,000. You lost roughly $50,000 in a year and a half. October of 2007 to March of 2009. And I will tell you, in March of 2009, things weren't looking too pretty. We had already lost 50%. And how much confidence did anybody have that the market was going to respond like it did? Would have you been willing to weather the storm? I know many people sold out. They tried to find different strategies. This is when the gold play came in. You heard all about gold and all this other kind of crazy stuff to buy. But what happened? What do we do? So if you stuck with it, how long did it take to break even? You invested $100,000 October of 2007, the high of the market. Invested $100,000 in the S&P 500. You drove it all the way down, a year and a half. Lost 50% of your money. How long did it take to recoup it all back? That answer is March of 2012. Okay, so think about this. He had $100,000 in October of 2007. And on March of 2012, had you just left your investment alone, you're worth $100,000. That doesn't sound like a very good investment, though, does it? 07 to 2012, that's 5 years, flat. 0% rate of return over the past 5 years. But think about what has happened since then. Whether it was 11,000 or 14,000, does it really matter? Where we're sitting here at 24 and 25 and 26,000 only 7 years later? Things have changed. You need to be patient. And you know what? I think only the nutcases had 100% of their money in the S&P 500. If you're like many of our clients, you probably had a portfolio that was around 60-40. Some had a little more, some had a little bit less. Now, everybody's performance is different. People take money out, people add money. But if I just look at the report that came out of J.P. Morgan, they took a look at what if you invested 60% of your money in the S&P 500 index and 40% of your money in the bond index. In October of 2007, you invested it right there, 60-40, 60% S&P 500, 40% bonds. October of 2007, when the market dropped to March of 2009, the lowest point, how much did you lose? You lost about 25%. So your 100,000 dropped to 75,000. Still nothing exciting. No one's feeling great about the fact that they just lost $25,000. And you know what? Most people would be talking about, I just lost $25,000, not I just lost 25%. Everybody's about the dollars. It's about the Benjamins, right? But how long, interestingly, did it take for you to get back to even? How long did it take to get back to even? How about October of 2010? Your low point was March of 2009. It took October of 2010, and you're back to even. 3 years to go down and back up for a 0% rate of return for over those 3 years, just to be even. You invested in the S&P 500 that same time. It took from 2007 to 2012, 5 years. And what's really interesting is that we were able to manage the volatility during that period of time. You didn't go through the great waves of the ups and downs of what the S&P did. You held out in 3 years, and you've done spectacular as well if you've stuck to your strategy. The point being is that trying to chase the best performers, trying to chase just the stock market, trying to follow, how am I going to do to beat the S&P 500? Nobody beats the S&P 500. Nobody beats the S&P 500 consistently unless you're just investing in a portfolio designed right up against it. It's not going to happen. Don't let anybody tell you that they do. And that, my friends, is financial advice in a language you can understand. And with that, we have to take a quick break. When we're back, I've got more to talk to you about the markets, about how you can manage yourself in this volatile period of time. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
What a sound. Oh, what a show. Oh, what a night. It's Jersey Boys on stage at North Shore Music Theater.
Sherry, Sherry, baby.
How did four blue-collar kids become one of the greatest success stories in pop music history? Find out at Jersey Boys, Broadway's Tony Award-winning musical about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. Experience the true story musical phenomenon that takes you behind the scenes and behind the music.
Big girls
don't cry.
They don't cry.
Why don't you come on?
Put on the dress on.
Jersey Boys is at Bill Haney's North Shore Music Theater from August 6th through September 1st only. Get your tickets today at nsmt.org.
Oh, what a night.
Sponsored by Abiomed.
Starting that up. Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, where we're providing financial planning and investment management advice to individuals and families all throughout the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the Southern New Hampshire area since 1968. Not me. I was two. Dad started the firm back then. I joined our firm in 1991. After graduating from Babson College in 1989, I worked for a year at the Ship Restaurant. I was the restaurant manager there. As many of you remember that restaurant, no longer there. Now the Christmas tree shops, of course. I also sold Chinese food takeout containers for a company called Atlas Paper Company. And in the midst of that, I also hosted karaoke shows. And so, I've got a little bit of a background in entertainment. And, yeah, I used to host karaoke shows in downtown Faneuil Hall. There was a bar there called Seaside. Maybe you remember there was Seaside and Cityside, for those of you that used to go down there. On Tuesday night, I was singing songs in there because it was generally pretty quiet. And if no one showed up to sing, you got to keep singing to get people to come in. So a few people were in, a couple of women walk in. One of them asked to sing a duet with me. Her name was Laura. She sang the song Summer Nights with me. And the rest is history. Laura asked me that day at the bar as we're talking. She says, hey, what's your last name? I said, my last name's Friedman. She says, my last name's Weinstein. You want to get married? Yeah, that's true. That's really, really what happened. And 4 months later, we were engaged. 14 months later, we were 4 months later, we were engaged. 14 months later, we were married. And we will be celebrating our 27th wedding anniversary this September. So, congratulations to Laura. And me, I guess. 27 years, it's pretty cool. And we got 5 kids, it's pretty awesome. Anyways, that's how I got into the business. I started in 1991. My business partner, Marion, joined us in 2000. She became a partner of the firm in 2010. So Marion and I both run the show. Dad retired in 2007. So here we are. Well, it's just me today. Marion sometimes joins me here in the radio studio. But today, it is just me. I want to talk to you a little bit about putting into perspective market returns in light of this volatile market. Earlier in the show, I talked about the fact that I proved to you the fact that a 60-40 portfolio holds up a lot better than does a 100% stock portfolio when you go through the full cycle of markets going down and going back up again. I illustrated to you how when an investment just in the S&P 500 goes down, an investment in a 60-40 mix doesn't go down nearly as much. And it returns to its original value, that 60-40 mix, a lot quicker than does that S&P 500 mix. But oftentimes you hear the conversation, well, over the past umpteen years, the stock market has done 9% or 8% or 7%. Well, here's a report that I have from J.P. Morgan that says, historically, over the past 20 years, the S&P 500 has produced an average rate of return, including dividends, of 7.4%. How would you like that? 7.4%. I'd say, oh, that's great. Someone would say, oh, that's it? Because it used to be 9. If you went back all the way to the 1920s, that number was around 9. But over the past 20 years, it's been 7. But so what? Whether it's 7 or 9 doesn't matter, because the illustration that I'm going to share with you today really is going to blow you away. I am going to go back until 1926. And I have a report here that's called Long-Term Asset Returns of the S&P 500, or their reasonable equivalent, because there really wasn't the S&P 500 in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. They modified them to go along. So if you go back to 1926 to 2018, and you ask yourself, what was the return of the S&P 500 or its facsimile in each year? So you pick 1937, 1941, 1964, 1981. At the end of the year, we always talk about how the S&P 500 did that year. Well, I worked with Invesco to have them build what's called a histogram, where you build this chart that shows us what was the performance in various periods of time. And so I want you to imagine a straight line that goes, a horizontal line that goes across, and in the middle of that line, you draw a zero. And then in increments to the right and to the left, each increment represents a 5% increase in return. So the first increment positively is 0 to 5, the next is 5 to 10, the next is 10 to 15. You get it, right? And on the other side, it's 0 to negative 5, is negative 5 to negative 10, and it goes that way. So I said, I want you to drop the year where the return corresponds to the performance number. So for instance, where the And I'm going to just use this as an example. I'm going to need to put on my glasses here for a second so I can see this number. So in 1993, the S&P 500 returned between 10 and 15%. So we'd put 1993 on that chart, on that bar, and we'd start to build up these little columns, I guess we'd call them. So I told you the S&P 500 returned 7-point-something percent over the past 20 years, 9-something over the past, since inception. So if we look at going back all of those years, it doesn't matter whether it's 7 or 9 because that still falls within the band of 5 to 10%, right? So how many times over the past, I don't know, 2018 to 2026, quick math says that is 92 years, over the period of time, how many times did the market end between 5 and 10%? Think about that. So you have 92, I think I'm doing that right, 2018 minus 1926, I believe that is 92. So you got 92 choices, 92 years with numbers. How many times did the market end between 5 and 10% for the year? What do you think? I know the answer. You can shout it out if you want, but I'm going to tell you. The answer is 8. 8 times. It's really remarkable. You were right. Jay, good guess. And all of you that yelled out 8, I heard you. Congratulations. You win a prize for listening. But what's rather interesting is that in order to get that average rate of return, we needed to see a lot of returns that varied way out on the spectrum. So let me give you an example. Earlier in the show, I told you about how the market was at its all-time high in 2007. So from 2007 to 2009, the stock market dropped from its all-time high to its lowest that we can remember, and then it responded back the other way. So what did the market do in 2007? How did it end up? What was its range? In 2007, the market, believe it or not, for the year, was up between 5 and 10%. Now, that may not be surprising to you because you hear, well, the market had a great run going into October of 2007, and then it fell off. But still, when we ended the year, we were still up between 5 and 10% in the S&P 500. And then came 2008. That was a tough year, right? That was the financial crisis, all of that. How did that end up? Well, that 2008 led us to a return of negative 35 to negative 40. Negative 35 to negative 40. But the worst year, at least according to what most people think, was 2009, because that's where we hit our low number. Would it surprise you if I told you that 2009 ended the year up between 25 and 30%? I think that would surprise you, wouldn't it? Because I just told you, October of 2007 was the high point, March of 2009 was the low point. But what we forget is that when we hear about performance numbers, they're generally measured January to December. Oftentimes you can hear other performance numbers of, you know, the high of October, the low in March. So in 07, you got a return between 5 and 10%. In 08, you got a return between 35 and 40%. And this is what the typical S&P 500 index did. In 2009, you were up 25 to 30%. How about 2010? 2010, up between 15 and 20. 2011, up 0 to 5. 2012, up 15 to 20. 2013, up 30 to 35. 2014, up 10 to 15. 2015, I can keep going here, up 0 to 5. 2016, up 10 to 15. 2017, up 20 to 25. And up, finally, in 2018, performance 5 to 10%. So the only time during that entire stretch of a lousy market did the lousy and great market, did the market ever, did the market produce a return between 5 and 10%? Only one time during those 10-year period, that 10 years. That's pretty amazing. So we talk about getting a rate of return between 7, 8% on a S&P 500 index. Yet if you think you're going to get that consistently, You're going to see that on a linear number. You're going to get 7% this year, 7% the next year. Maybe you'll get 8. Maybe you'll get 6. No, not even close will that happen. You got to be willing to ride it out. What I've asked someone to do is to do the long-term asset return projections on 60-40 portfolios and what that would look like. But what is amazing to me is how people so zone in on, I need to beat the S&P 500. And I'll ask you, why? And most people say, because that's what I thought I was supposed to be beating. That's not a good answer. That's not responsible financial planning or investment management or portfolio construction. No, what you got to do is first and foremost, understand what does your portfolio need to look like so you can most comfortably accomplish your financial goals down the road. Not right now. Down the road. Because at some point, whether it's age 65, 63, 70, 75, I don't care what the year is, you're no longer going to get a paycheck. You're going to get Social Security. Perhaps you'll get a pension or one or the other. But the bulk of it is going to have to come from the money that you have. And you don't want to take the risk of hitting that marker, that date in your life, a year after the market just dropped 40%. You can't be playing, oh, I'm going to try to beat the market. A lot of people ask me, Mark, as I get older, should I be changing my portfolio? Should I be making it more conservative? And my belief has been, if you're 50 plus, build a 70-30, 60-40 portfolio, and chances are for the rest of your life, you'll never have to do anything more than that. You'll rebalance along the way. You'll do some tweakings here and there. But for the most part, that 60-40 is going to work out just fine. We have clients who are in their 90s, 100 years old right now, and have loved maintaining that 60-40, something around their mix. We all heard the old rule of thumb. The old rule of thumb said, you buy your age in bonds, right? That's one of those old wives' tales. So when you're 80, you buy 80% of your portfolio in bonds, 20% in cash. That worked great in the 70s and certainly in the 80s when bonds were paying 12 and 15%. Oh, I remember those days, Mark. Yeah, I know you remember those days. Those days ain't coming back anytime soon. We have to rethink this. We have to rebuild your portfolio so that it's right for you now, right for you later, and allow you to live the lifestyle that you want in retirement for the rest of your life so that you can enjoy it doing what you've always wanted to do, achieve those goals. And at Friedman Financial, that is what we help you do. That's going to do it for us today. That's going to do it for Dollars and Cents. I hope you've enjoyed financial advice in a language you can understand. I've got to get out of here, but I will be back next Sunday from 8 to 9. Thanks for listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you. Consider your investment objectives, risk, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity subaccounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.